Okay, good afternoon. Hi, my name is J.P. Lutz, and I just wanted to welcome all of you to Research Presentation 5. Please join me in welcoming Jerry Strecker on the topic of Blurring Color Lines, the Integrated Interstate League of 1926.
As many of you know, I've been working on a biography of Oscar Charleston for a few years now, and part of what's taking it so long is that I keep finding little nuggets that distract me. And this little nugget, the Interstate League of 1926, is actually directly involved with Charleston, as you'll hear. How many of you have heard of the 1926 Interstate League? unsung, unheard of, even by many of the newspapers. To set up some background, the 1925 Eastern Colored League had problems. Owners didn't get along, schedules were unbalanced, there were disputes, there were problems keeping people in the ballparks. And at the end of the 25 season, there was some question about whether or not the league would continue in 1926. Also, 1925 is a period of great social turmoil in this part of Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey. When we think about the city of brotherly love, we don't often think about the Ku Klux Klan, but Philadelphia was the center of the eastern realm of the Pennsylvania Klan. And there were Klan rallies numbering 10, 20, 30,000 attendees throughout this part of the state and in southern New Jersey in 25 and 26. This cartoon from the Harrisburg Telegraph kind of says it all, the police chasing the African American into a Klan gathering. Now, the Interstate League. When the phrase first started being used for this incarnation of the Interstate League in January of 1926, it was originally conceived of as a white league. President Larry Summers, who had been the president of the 1925 Penn Jersey League and was the chair of the sesquicentennial baseball activities, now 1926 was the 150th anniversary of the country and Philadelphia was having a major celebration. He was the chair of the baseball festivities, and one reason for the Interstate League was knowing that tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people would be traveling to the sesquicentennial throughout the summer, and they wanted to have baseball attractions going on in this area of the state. So he was the president. Lou Schaub of Camden, who had been a former Western League player, was also in the organization, as was Duke Landgraf of the Allentown team, and Spider Merkel of Coatesville, who had been a player at Penn State and a player manager of the Shamokin team. They met in January of 26 and decided to organize a team. Originally, they were thinking 8 teams, all white, but by mid-February, they revised that down to 6. And what they were thinking was Wilmington, Coatesville, Allentown, Camden, Atlantic City, and for the 6th slot, either Hazleton or Lancaster. Both cities had had strong teams in the past. When they met in February, they had some issues to resolve. One was the number of teams, whether it would be 6 or 8. They couldn't decide on number of games for the season or for the week. Part of the reason for that question was that these teams all made their best money in exhibition games, and they didn't want to overbook their league schedules and take away that profit. There's also a question about roster size and salary limits. The numbers being tossed around were keeping the rosters to 16. For the salary limits, some owners wanted 3,000, some wanted 4,000, and this is per month for the whole team. So the number that they were starting to agree on was $3,500 per month. And the $1,000 bond the team would have to put up to join the league. Another issue that came up, President Summers wanted to apply to have this new interstate league be a Class B league, an official organized baseball. And Summers told the Chester Times newspaper that the Athletics and the Phillies were supportive of this and wanted to use it as a training circuit, and that also the New York Yankees were planning on using one of the teams as a farm club to help train their players. Now, this announcement came in February 16th. There's no further mention of a request for a Class B certification. And in fact, the next full mention of the Interstate League comes on March 9th, when the Chester Times announces that the plans for the proposed league have been abandoned. Interestingly, same newspaper, same day, facing page, makes the announcement that Ed Bolden, the African-American owner of the Hilldale Club, had held a meeting the previous night in Philadelphia to organize the Interstate League. But his conception of the league was three white teams and three teams from the Eastern Colored League. The president of this league would be Frank Miller, a local baseball organizer. And he was white, but both the black and white teams fully supported him as choice. The teams, Hilldale, Harrisburg Giants, Baccarat Giants, Camden, Allentown, and they were thinking about Hazleton. Hazleton is the sixth, but there had been no formal agreement yet. And this was March 12th. Why? Why would Baccarat Giants, Hilldale, and Harrisburg want to join this league? As I said to begin with, the Eastern Colored League was struggling, and by March of 26, they tried to hold two organizational meetings for the ECL, and both attempts had failed. So there was a serious possibility that the ECL would not go through. So the teams decided to join this mixed league, and the games that they played against each other, like if Hilldale faced Harrisburg, the game would count for both the ECL competition and the Interstate League. Cumberland Posey, in his Sportive Realm column in the Pittsburgh Courier, commented on this. He said that the three black teams had made a good move for themselves by lining up with the three white clubs. But he also predicted some concerns. He thought that these games might outdraw what he called the Eastern Mutual Association, but the Eastern Colored League. And he thought that the effects would be felt by all of the African-American clubs in the area. He predicted there would be fewer exhibition games because with the matchups for both the ECL and the Interstate League, there wouldn't be as many free dates for exhibitions. And he also predicted and giggled a little that it would also cut into Nat Strong's profits because Nat Strong had been making a fortune off of booking the Baccarat Giants. Both of those concerns did come true. To fill the sixth spot in the league, President Miller engaged Henry Passon, who ran a Philadelphia sporting goods store, to back a Chester team and enter it into the league. And Passon had the connections and also the cash to put together a decent roster. He started by hiring Howard Lohr as manager, and he had been on the pennant-winning 1924 Chester team. He'd also played in the majors, 18 games with the Reds and 14 and 3 with the Indians in 1916. Not very good in the majors, but he sipped his cup of coffee. This made the 1926 Interstate League in which some sports columnists called the colored division and the white division, with Harrisburg, Hilldale, and Baccarat, Allentown, Camden, and Chester. Teams close enough so that the jumps between games were short. In fact, some of the teams would play a game on their home field. Chester was notorious for this. They'd play a game, and then they'd hop to another city to play a twilight game. So they'd do an afternoon, then an evening in another city. The official schedule was announced on the 21st. Sorry, this is fuzzy. It's off a microphone. But the schedule was balanced in its conception. Ultimately, it didn't turn out that way. Some teams played far more many games, partly because of the schedule, but also partly because of the weather. Another comment about the league, Chicago Cubs scout and former Chester player manager Billy Williams said that what the semi-pro game had needed around Philadelphia for many years was a first-class league. And judging by reports, I look for the Interstate to be one of the best independent leagues in the East, if not the country. This kind of comment was common in the press. And when I say the press, the white press. The black press hardly covered the Interstate League at all, but there's much discussion in the Chester, the Camden, Lancaster, Harrisburg, Philadelphia papers. And support comes from the white sports writers as much as the black. All right. Have to change clothes here. Now, when you get in a baseball presentation, you always have to announce your bias. Go Harrisburg. This is my 26 Harrisburg jersey. All right, the Harrisburg Giants, to tell you the quality of play here, the manager was Oscar Charleston, considered to be the greatest player in the Negro Leagues at the time, and many thought he would have been competitive against any of the major leaguers at the time. You look at the rest of the roster, Fats Jenkins, Rap Dixon, Dick Johnson, Connie Day. It's a killer team. The owner, Colonel Struthers, had complete faith in Charleston. If you notice on the roster, there were two Cuban names. Struthers even asked Charleston to scout for Cuban players while he was in Cuba during the winter. I've seen Charleston's collection of Cuban baseball cards, penciled scouting notes on the back of them so that he would know who the best players were to ask to come up with it at the end of the winter. Little Oscar trivia. At the beginning of the 26th season in an exhibition game, April 29th, Charleston hit for the cycle. And he did it again less than 2 weeks later on May 12th in an interstate league against Camden. It's one of my favorite trivia questions. Which Hall of Famer hit for the cycle twice in less than 2 weeks? Answer is Oscar. All right, Hilldale's roster. Impressive. We've got Frank Warfield, George Carr, Phil Cockrell, Judy Johnson, Biz Mackey, Santop. Santop's at the end of his career. He's actually let go from the team a few weeks in. But another impressive roster. Baccarat Giants, some good names, not quite as strong as the other two. Actually, of the three black teams, they fare the worst in the league. Dick Lundy is managing. For the three white teams, these rosters changed a lot during the season. So I've just recorded a few names, mostly the ones with the major and minor league connections. For the Allentown Dukes, Gene Johnson had pitched for the A's in 16 and 17, 19, and then would return to the A's in 27, 28. And he had a 3.35 ERA as a pitcher. Claude Hendricks had been with the Pirates and the Whales and the Cubs with a 2.65 ERA. Walter Keating had been with the Cubs and the Phillies. And Tony Pasquarello is a kind of a local hero who is also noteworthy. With these pitchers going up against those Harrisburg and Hilldale bats, the games were exciting and balls flew. Chester's team. Chester brought a lot of money. I think they exceeded the $3,000 limit. But they went after former major and minor leaguers who were living in the area and convinced them to come back to play, kind of to draw in the crowds. These men weren't all on the team at the same time. Some of them would come in for a week or a weekend as a special feature. But several major and minor leaguers. The first player that Lohr hired was Label Goldblatt, who had been the captain of the University of Pennsylvania team and had played for Dover. Remember I said that the Klan activity was quite fierce in this area? The Klan went after Jews and Catholics as much as African Americans. So when I talk about an integrated league, there's a lot of diversity in these teams. The Camden Skeeters had Dick Spaulding, who would be with the Phillies and the Senators, player who'd been with Raleigh and Houston. Probably the most interesting name on this list is Johnny Carr, and I'm still working on this. The only Johnny Carr who shows up in Baseball Reference played for the Dayton Marcos in 1919 and 1921. Dayton Marcos is a Negro League team. If this is the same Johnny Carr, that would suggest that there was a player who was passing for a white on the team. Not sure yet, working on it. Another interesting note with Camden's team, this is their baseman, Buck Tin Lai. Tin Lai was Chinese. He had toured the U.S. with the Chinese-Hawaiian team in the teens. And in 1915, he'd had a tryout with the White Sox. He was considered the greatest of the Chinese players who toured with that Hawaiian team. And he played with Camden for the first half after the league disbanded on July 1st. He moved up to Chester. Opening day was May 1st, and there was great ceremony, whether the matchups were white-white, white-black, black-black. There was great ceremony. Huge crowds came out, thousands of people to see these games. And the press initially recorded them all. Whether, in this case, it's Hilldale and Baccarat, when the matchups were two of the black teams with the ECL and the Interstate League, the crowds were huge. Harrisburg Giants, when they were playing, the crowds came out, not to see the Allentown Stars in this case, but to see Oscar Charleston, who was celebrated as the best player in the area. And the comment about Charleston hitting one over the fence and featuring, he hit over 42 home runs in 1926, so home runs were frequent. All right, this collection of snippets shows part of the problem of the Interstate League. Chester bows to Hilldale, 3-1. Hilldale captures a battle 2-0 over Camden. Camden beaten by Baccarat, 15-1. Harrisburg beating Chester, 23-6. And Harrisburg taking Camden, 8-3. The headlines in the first part of the season are huge numbers for the black teams, small numbers for the white teams. The mismatch was substantial. In fact, Harrisburg was 5-0 after the first couple of weeks leading the league. Eventually, the white teams started to pick up strength, but by then, even by mid, late May, many of the white fans had stopped coming out because the outcomes of the games were predetermined. Plus, the summer of 1926 is what one sports writer called the winter of their discontent. It was cold, it was rainy. So many games had to be canceled or played in the rain. The Harrisburg Giants were in the league for most of the season. Hilldale snuck ahead for a couple weeks, but it was mostly all about Harrisburg. In May, there was a spat between Harrisburg and the Chester team. The white umpire had made a call that wasn't Charleston who got feisty, it was actually Colonel Struthers who got feisty, and Struthers pulled his team from the field. And that made the league develop a fine system. They would fine teams $250 for forfeiting a game on a weekday, $500 for forfeiting a weekend. They also met to talk about expanding the league, bringing in a couple more teams. So we're talking about the Baltimore Black Sox, managed by Ben Taylor, CI's brother, and maybe bringing in Trenton. Things were looking good, and it kind of depended on what newspaper you read. Some were talking just everything was going rosy. Others were talking about low numbers at the ballpark. The race teams were leading. If you found, in this case it was the Pittsburgh Courier, actually mentioned the Interstate League. But then in other papers you see Allentown struggles. Allentown was probably having the most trouble getting people to come out to the park. In fact, in June they brought in the Villanova quarterback and team captain to play for a game, thinking that would draw out crowds. Good idea, except the kid broke his leg sliding in the second, and the very next day the Dukes quit the Interstate League. Trenton wanted the franchise, and there's talk about them coming in and Baltimore coming in, but all of a sudden things start changing in Philly. I'm not saying that this is what caused the demise of the league, but in late June, there started to be a controversy between the Philadelphia mayor and the local Klan. The Klan swore it had gotten permission to hold a rally in September during the sesquicentennial. The mayor said no, and then the Klan produced letters from the mayor that said he was giving permission. And this resulted in a rally across the river in New Jersey where 10,000 people came out, 10,000 Klansmen came out in protest. And the same day that they were having their protest, the Interstate League was having its meeting to decide what it was going to do about the second half of the season. Trenton, the team they needed to come in to, for the league to survive, did not attend. Why? Nobody said. And that was the last mention of the Interstate League. Chester, the team left the city, and the only mention after this comes in the Pittsburgh Courier when they say that the semi-pro game here in Philadelphia has faded away due to lack of attendance. There was a lot of buildup for this league, but when it comes to the end, there's very little engagement. Kind of the so what for this. Some lessons that we can learn. Part of what took the league down was uneven talent. Harrisburg and Hilldale just had too many Hall of Famers and sluggers for things to work. Economics were also important. Oscar Charleston was making $450 or $500 a month. Struthers signed Beckwith in July, probably paying him as much. And this is during a summer, 25-26, when the anthracite coal industry was faltering. So there was that tension between the fans not having enough money to come to the games, the players wanting too much money to play, and the owners very much knowing that the players had no choice but to accept the salaries because there weren't jobs for them outside of baseball. Social issues, especially with the Klan. Also the prohibition of Sunday baseball. Harrisburg couldn't play Sunday games in Harrisburg. They played in Lancaster. Lancaster loved it. The Lancaster newspaper actually said that they preferred to lease their team to the Harrisburg Giants for Sunday games rather than the Harrisburg Senators, the white team, because they knew that the Giants would fill the park and bring in more cash. Also, personalities clashing, especially Struthers and Bolden. Terrible weather, and it went from rainy and cold to, by mid-July, a streak of 100-degree days that brought about tragic deaths from heat. Also, policies with scheduling and forfeits. But probably most important, the last item, newspaper coverage. Some of the cities, Chester was great. They covered the league all the way through. Harrisburg Telegraph covered the league. Other cities started off strong and tapered off once they got tired of writing headlines saying that their local white team had been trumped again by Hilldale and Harrisburg. And as the mentions of the games disappear, the league standings are no longer printed, even upcoming games aren't announced in the newspapers anymore, it's no surprise that attendance in the game dwindles. Last thing I'd like to say is this. When you're studying something like, I got into this with the Harrisburg Giants, it's important to keep in mind that you have to look at multiple newspapers. When I only looked at the Harrisburg Telegraph, everything was rosy because the Giants were doing well. When I read the Allentown paper, it was a different story. When I read the Camden paper, it was an entirely different story. And the other thing I want to say is just that when you're doing the Negro League research, those newspapers in Camden and Allentown and Lancaster and Harrisburg have box scores, full game narratives, and stories. It's important for things like the Interstate League to move beyond the Pittsburgh Courier and the Black Press because the full story is actually hiding elsewhere. And yes, it's in microfilm, so get out the crank and your spare glasses.
Great. We'll now open it up to questions if anybody has any.
Actually, and maybe you said this and I didn't hear it. What happened after that year?
They only made it for the first half of the season, and Harrisburg claimed the first half. It's not clear why they stopped. Teams leaving, whether it was the tensions happening here with the Klan, it's not clear. It just dissipated. And the ECL made it through the season, so the black teams didn't need the Interstate League.
You mentioned you're a research Charleston person, which is a little off topic of those. Do you know whether or not the numbers being printed for Charleston in Negro League play will by any chance have this league mixed in?
I'm not sure.
This,
they should, though.
This league seems so noteworthy to us now. There were exhibition games, of course, between white teams and black teams. Is that the only reason why it wasn't so noteworthy then that it would not receive coverage from the NFL black press?
I don't know. Part of the issue is the Pittsburgh Courier, and Composey is a columnist, and it's all about the Homestead Grays. And Homestead was excluded from the ECL and this other activity. And the ECL and the Interstate League meant fewer teams available for exhibition games. I'm not sure. That's the thing with the press. There's what you have, and then there are all those blank spaces where you have to think about what's missing.
So you list eight possible reasons why this league ultimately failed. And based on your reading of the situation, do you have any feel for which of these were more prominent in killing it off, or do you think they're all kind of different?
Very much a combination, but the absence of discussion in the press, which is probably pressure from advertisers and communities, so related to other points. Mm-hmm. Bolden was one of the teams, and Bolden was the ECL. There wasn't any objection. They were still playing their ECL scheduled games.
Next question, Becker.
In the different papers, there's some mentions of spats between Struthers and Bolden. There's nothing direct. There's just suggestions of what the problems are. The big problem between the two of them was schedule. Bolden was taking the best dates, and Harrisburg was having trouble getting good dates in its home field. And not getting enough dates compared to the number of games that Hilldale was getting was part of it. Well, when you look at the microfilm, not digitized clippings, you see the whole page. So you see if Camden wins a game, you see large capital letters, huge headlines. When Camden gets the butt kicked by Harrisburg, tiny, tiny, down in a corner, hidden, and might not even have a box score. And when it's that, not as many of those big headlines, and it's disappearing into the edges, yeah.
Please let's join me in thanking Jared for her presentation.